This week's conversation with Rita Gashbard is sponsored by the Embroiderers Guild of America at egausa.org. One of the more popular 2022 EGA offerings has been the EGA Virtual Lectures. In 2023, the EGA is expanding the number of available seats from 100 to 500 and adding a small fee for each lecture to cover costs. These lectures are excellent, and it will be great to have them available to more people. Other benefits of being an EGA member include the always excellent Needle Arts magazine, a large number of free projects, online courses, group correspondence course lightning rounds, which are a great opportunity for members at large and small EGA chapters to take a correspondence course, and the Dorothy Babcock Memorial Library, which consists of more than 2,000 needlework books and a non-circulating reference section of rare and historical materials. Join the EGA today, either as a member at large or through your local EGA chapter. Thanks to EGA for sponsoring this week's show, and now, on to our conversation with Rita Gashbard. Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Beth Ellicott.
And you're listening to Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for needlework artists. From Portugal this week, our guest is Rita Gashbard.
Yeah.
That was my attempt at being confident at saying her name the way the Portuguese say it. I failed.
Yes.
It was okay. It was okay.
Well, we're glad to have you here either way, Rita.
Thank you.
We were talking before we recorded because Beth and I have learned a new word, how to say embroidery in Portuguese.
Yeah, you are going to say it now again?
Yeah.
Yeah,
you want me to go first?
You try first, Beth.
Bordado.
Yeah.
Bordado.
Yeah, can I say it now?
Yes, now say it right.
Yeah.
Bordado.
Yeah.
Oh, it was good. Beth is speaking Brazilian, but I'll let it slide.
Oh, Rita, don't suck up to us, Rita. It was pathetic.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Right. Yeah. I can't get that little tilde R in there before that D. That's hard to do. You know, I think that would take a little bit more practice for me. But.
Yeah. Our tongues don't work that way. Oh well. Anyway, so we have a new word. It's spelled Bordado. That's how we spell it. So, yay for us, multilingual needlework people.
Yeah.
Yes. Learning something new. That's what we want to do. That's the point of this podcast, right? Learning new things.
That's right. Yep. Language was not on the original list, but it can be there now. Yeah. All right, Rita. Crochet. How do you go from crochet to embroidery? Was it crochet just not enough of a challenge?
It was actually because of that. It stopped being a challenge. That's why I stopped. Yeah, I actually learned amigurumi first. I don't know if you know what it is. It's a kind of crochet. Oh, okay. So I think it's a Japanese technique. I'm not sure of this, where you work in crochet, but just you are working in rounds and it's all in a circle. So everything that you do starts in a circle. And that's what I learned first. If you search for it online, you'll see like a lot of toys. It's basically what they do. And then I learned first that and then moved to crochet. I did it for about 2 years, I think. And then I get bored. I got bored because I could do like everything I wanted to. Yeah. Not I can make everything in crochet, but I already knew a lot of stitches and I could follow instructions. And then I got bored. It was not challenging. And I was like, let me try a different thing. And I actually tried cross stitch first and then I moved to embroidery. But cross stitch lasted like 2 months. And I was like, I'm bored by this. Let's move to another one. Yeah, because cross stitch, it's not that challenging. Like, it's challenging how much time you spend doing it. But like getting the hang of it, I didn't think it was hard. So that's how I ended up doing embroidery.
That's okay. We'll take that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right, so you're a mathematician, so your mind operates on a different channel then.
Yeah. It's funny. I think it's two sides of your brain working, right? The creativity, it's on the one side, and then the logical, it's on the other. And this is me trying to make the two of them work. Yeah, but I think my mind works in a different way.
Yeah, that's all right. Well, Beth comes from an engineering world, and so for her, it's hot. You know, it's always how did they do that? Yeah,
right, right. How did? So I want to figure out. Okay, so how did they make that? How did they do that? So I can understand that if you know making little X's after a while, I was like, I can make little X's, but I got to try something new. So how did you learn to do embroidery?
So the same way I learned crochet and cross stitch, it was all through YouTube. Basically, yeah, with crochet, like I bought a needle and then my mother knows how to do it. I tried learning with her. It was horrible. I just, I give up. It's because she was like, you're not holding the needle right. You're doing this wrong. And I was like, but it's working. So I dropped that teacher. But it was all through YouTube. I had a cousin that gave me her supplies. She did cross stitch and she had all this thread and she gave it to me, like, try it. And I used it and then it was all online. And then it started being like through mistakes, especially what I do now has been through mistakes and then learning. That part is learning by myself. But I think YouTube, you're not actually learning by yourself. Someone is teaching you. But it has been basically YouTube.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with that. It's amazing what the impact that has. If we could step back and see how many people have learned how much needlework just from YouTube, I bet it'd be pretty amazing.
Yeah, and then you kind of search for the things you want to learn. So when I started being interested in thread painting, I search a lot of, I live in Pinterest, basically. And then you find artists, and these artists are giving classes online. Then you attend those classes. And that's it for me. That was it. You just curiosity, I think.
Yeah. Now, all right, so Pinterest, that's an interesting one because I hate it. It drives me nuts. I can't
really
figure it out. Yeah, I can't figure it out. And I think Beth's with me on this. I just struggle with
too.
The whole interface. I can't make it work for me. And I've tried. Give it a serious effort. So it's a main tool for you then.
It was in the beginning. Now, not so much. When I'm feeling, when I have like a creative block, I go there. And then I get inspired because the algorithm is already working for me. So he knows what I want to see. So it's all good for me. But in the beginning, I think it's amazing, especially when I was learning simple things, simple embroidery things. I had some stitches there, and then it directs you to blogs, and then you go to blogs and you learn more things. But yeah, it's kind of overwhelming, Pinterest, but it's good. The algorithm is working fine there for me.
And I just can't, I think I can't figure out how it works either. And I know I've, pinned a few things that I liked, and then I get all these messages. Oh, look at this pin! Look at it, and I find it overwhelming. And I like, okay, I just can't look at this.
Oh
anymore,
yeah, but I don't do. I scroll through it, then I pin some things, like to have an inspiration board, and then the things that are going to appear to me in the other day are based on that, and that's what I'm looking for, like to give hints to the algorithm. Like I like to see this, this, and this, then I pin things. Sometimes I don't even go and see them ever again. But I'm like feeding the algorithm things I want to see. So it kind of works as the inspiration board for me.
Okay. All right. That makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. I still gave up on it and I'm not going back.
I mean, I feel like there's a lot of inspiration on Instagram. So if you follow the right artists, it will appear like the same thing as Pinterest, I think.
Yeah. Now see Instagram works for me. And that feeds a lot. Like a lot of guests have come from Instagram, just that same kind of path. Yeah.
Yeah. You can follow, for example, hashtags, and then it will start showing you artists that you don't know and you find them through them. That works for me. I also follow some pages that post things from different artists, which is also good. I think it works. I think Pinterest is kind of being replaced by Instagram.
Yeah. Well, I think that's how I found you. Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, well, I had that question. How did you find me?
I'm pretty sure it was Instagram. You just popped up. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm struggling a lot with Instagram. I don't know if you see these like posts of artists struggling with their reach. And it didn't used to bother me, but now it does because I get messages from my followers telling me, I'm sorry, but your posts are not appearing on my feed. Like, I don't see them. And that kind of makes me sad. But I also don't want to fight the algorithm for attention. But yeah, I'm beginning to get upset by it.
Yeah, they're awful focused on the reels, those little short videos. And
yeah.
We just want the pictures.
And I'm not sure why they went to that, because I think it did make a lot of the artists upset, and people that I followed in mixed media especially. They were like, we don't want to do a reel. We just want to show our work. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's marketing. It's for sales, I think. It's for brands. And small artists, it's really hard. I mean, I don't rely on selling my work, so I'm kind of fine with it. I'm upset, but okay, I'm not going to fight it. But for people that it's their job, I think it's pretty tough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they aren't, not helping that at all. No, I know a lot of people frustrated. Yeah, it's too bad. But then we know that somebody will come along with a social media something here in the next year, and it'll become the
everybody will. everyone move to that one.
Yeah, I think it will. I mean, it was what happened with Facebook, right? Facebook was replaced by Instagram, then became TikTok and Snapchat and whatever. They are always going to find a way, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So right. Is needlework something that you did through school, through your school years, particularly mm-hmm. in university or whatever level you call it?
yeah.
I mean, was it an escape for your mentally, an escape, or how did it play a role for you?
Yeah, so crafts for me started with crochet, and it started like in the last year of school, high school, senior year, as you would say, I think. It was because I had a lot of free time, okay? And I chose to learn crochet. Like, I am a good kid. I learned crochet and was like, I just have too much time on my hands and nothing to do. And then when I moved to university, it was kind of the same thing, except that I didn't have free time.
Yeah.
I just needed something to focus on that it was not school. And I don't know if you feel this, but I get so immersed in my work that I forget everything. I need to be so focused, and it helps my mind relax. So it was kind of an escape from college. Yeah, absolutely. But I was never an artistic kid. I was never into painting or anything like that. It just started with me having free time on my last year of high school.
See, that's so interesting, because from your work, you wouldn't be able to tell that there's no art background, because it sure looks like there is.
It's so funny. When people ask me what I do or whatever, I always tell them my job, what pays my bills. But I never tell them about my embroidery. So it's I'm living a double life, I feel like. The life of an artist and the other life. I still don't think it's a talent or anything like that. I think I just focused a lot of time in improving it. It's like it's a challenge for me. Like, it's difficult, so I'm going to perfect this thing. But I don't feel like I'm artistic. If you ask me to draw anything, for example, I don't know how to do it. I will go to the easy shapes.
Yeah, see, when I read that, I it was like, wait a minute. No, you have to be able to draw to do what you do, but you found a way to get it done without being able to sit down with a pencil and write it on paper. That's impressive.
Yeah, that's the thing. Before I moved to thread painting, because I started liking portraits a lot, and I was like, I wish it was the first time it was on Pinterest that I felt like embroidery was art. It was like, wow, this is incredible. And I'm never going to be able to do this because I don't know how to draw. And then I was doing an online course with, I think, an artist from Argentina, and she was doing portraits. And I was like, this is it. I'm going to learn how to draw portraits. And what she does is basically she prints the photo, puts a page on top, and just outlines the features. And I felt so stupid. Like, why am I saying that I don't know how to draw when I don't even need to know how to do it? So you find a way around it. And I was like, you learned this in primary school, to outline something. So yeah, I don't know how to draw, but I found a way to do it.
So that's how you get you start with like the basic facial shape, and you just trace that on your cloth?
That's exactly what I do. I first do it on paper, so I have the photo. I always use it in black and white, so it doesn't make me go choose colors based on the original photo. That's why I always would use black and white. And then I just trace the features, and then I put it on my fabric, and then I just go choose the colors as I feel. At first, I thought I need to choose all the colors before I start my work. Now I just go choose four colors, like the lightest one, the darker one, and then two in between. And then I just work from there.
It's so simple, Beth. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
What's
right.
your problem, Beth?
Why are you not doing it?
because I have tried to draw faces. And I know how difficult that is to get the face to look right. And so it's interesting that you said you followed someone who said to just trace it. And I thought, well, duh.
Yeah.
You know, here I am trying to start from scratch. And you can't get the eyes in the right place. The nose is wrong. The lips are totally off. It looks like a goofus. And
that was literally what I thought. I was like, I feel so stupid right now, because it's an easy way to do it. And you know this, you know how to trace something with a paper, yeah. But I then did some courses with people doing all the things from scratch, like to understand that your eyes are in a position related with your mouth and your nose. So I kind of wanted to learn that as well.
Right.
So now I know, like, the end of your eye is aligned with your lips, and I'm careful with that, but I still do it that way.
Wait a minute. The end of your eyes align with – wait a minute.
It's not – wait, let me now think of it. I am looking at my face. There's a part of your eyes that is aligned with your lips. Now I don't know – or is it your nose? Maybe it's your nose. I know that everything makes sense in your face. And everything, I think it's mathematics, okay?
It is.
It's for us, yeah. But it actually helped me. At first I thought I'm going to learn everything about embroidery, and that's how I'm going to perfect this technique. And then it was like learning different things. So if you want to do thread painting with faces, I would really recommend you see someone talk about the shades when people are taking photography, because it helped me a lot to understand how the shades work in our face, to identify which colors are the ones reflecting the light and which ones are the darker ones. Yeah.
I wish I had a mirror right now. Now I'm really curious.
Well, and I know your ear, because your ear is at a certain position on your face. And if you get that, If you get your ear wrong, it looks really strange too. So
I have a problem with ears. It's the thing that I have not perfected yet. If you look at a photo of a ear and you try to draw it, it's so hard. It's the thing that it's driving me crazy. It's the ears. I have not perfected that. I think it's the hardest part of the whole face.
And I, you know, I took a class where one of the lessons was we did an eye, and the intricacy of getting the eye, and we just did one eye. We didn't do two. We just drew one eye, and to get that roundness, to get all those little lines, that I didn't realize how intricate that was.
It's horrible.
But once,
so many videos on YouTube trying to get it right, and it's horrible.
But once you get, you know, if you can get it basically correct, you know, to a point of, wow, this really looks like an eye. It's like it's almost magic. You know what I mean? And then it's like, okay, now what do? I only have one eye. How do I get the other one in the right place?
And it needs to look the same. It needs to look exactly the same. I don't know if you noticed this in my work, but I never put eyelashes in my portraits.
Oh, I didn't notice.
Oh, yeah. And it's like I never put them on purpose, but I don't feel like they're missing there. But it's really hard to get them right. I've tried, and it doesn't look natural. Yeah, but I never put them there. I think it's funny because you were speaking about drawing eyes.
I got to go look now. And now I got to look, because there's a lot of people who do impressive eye embroidery, just the eye. And
it's amazing. Yeah. With all the colors, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I think I get away with not having a lot of details in my work, like in my eyes, because they are pretty small in like all the work. They are pretty small, so I kind of get away with it. And sometimes it's just, I just use black thread. It's all that is.
Yeah.
So I don't feel like I have that much detail.
Yeah, there's this artist that, from Moscow we were talking about before we started recording, Catherine Marchenko.
Oh, I think I know her. Now that you say it, yeah, I think I know her.
Her eyes are amazing.
Yeah.
And she does these big, giant pieces of work, and her eyes are just so captivating. But I never looked to see if she had eyelashes. I'll have to look.
I need to go and check, because I don't think I've noticed. Yeah. She does, like, things as big as her, right? If we're thinking about the same artist. Yeah. Yeah.
Long red hair. Yeah, long red hair.
Yeah, I know who she is. Yeah. Yeah. It's incredible.
Yeah, she's amazing. Yeah, yeah. She does these where she's standing at a wall stitching. They're massive pieces. Yeah.
I cannot imagine how long it takes her to do that.
I know. It's just so automatic to watch her. It's just, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so now we got to know. I see portraits, but then I read somewhere in the research that you're kind of not, you're getting away from portraits because they take so long. But your portraits, it isn't just the portrait itself, the embroidery itself, it's the background. How did you get to the point where you're bringing in these two pieces together, the background? Because you don't just take a piece of white cloth.
Yeah, so the idea doesn't come from me. So I don't know. You probably know this artist. It's Danielle Cloth. I don't know if I'm saying her last name right. She's from South Africa. And I did her class with her, like, on Skillshare. And then she released those kits, limited edition kits, and I bought it from her. So all these fabrics are from South Africa. They are traditional from there. And then she sent, like, 6 pieces of fabric, and I was like, should I try doing something in this? And I did one, and it wasn't perfect, but I kind of, like, when I'm working with this kind of fabric, I feel like it's part of the work. So it's not just the support of the embroidery. And I like it. I like it a lot. So I said I was going to move away from portraits, but I can't. I'm only doing portraits now. I cannot move away. I try to do smaller things. So I'm trying to do the eyes, just do the lips, because it does take a lot of time. And I try doing animals, but they don't turn out the way that I want to. So I'm always going back to portraits.
Okay. That was my reading, because I read that and then I looked at some of the other things and I just wanted to call you up and say, no, go back to portraits, because you're good at it. Yeah.
And I've tried some things, like maybe I'll try simple things, but it's the challenge. I need the challenge in portraits. The challenge is always there.
Yeah.
So I don't think I can move away from them.
She's stuck now.
I'm stuck. Yeah.
So but it's so fascinating to me the way you make the cloth work. I mean, when you select a background cloth, do you see if you have a portrait, do you see the background cloth that's going to work for that? How does that work in your mind?
I think it's the other way around. So I first choose the fabric, and then I do the portrait. And then the colors, I'll choose them along the way, but they are never chosen before I start it. So I always try to, the darkest color needs to be in some kind of symphony with the fabric. I don't know how to explain this symphony. It's just in my mind. It's hard. I don't know. I still haven't figured out my way of thinking. And it's funny because I did a workshop with a Brazilian watercolor artist. She was here in Porto. And I went to a workshop and I was like, I need you to help me to understand how to make colors work. And he was like, this was 3 months ago. And she looked at my work and she said, I think you already do. But you know those color circles? I don't know.
The color wheel. The color wheel?
And they have like a way you can learn how to read colors. I don't know. And I was trying to get there. Like, please help me make this make sense. And then she was like, I think you already got it. And it's in me. I don't know where I learned it. I don't know what it is that makes it work, but it just does.
Yeah, you're one of those, don't think about it, just do it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I wanted to understand the logic behind it, but I just given up because I've tried to read some things about colors and how they work. It's just, it doesn't work in my mind. It's just, it has to be the way that I feel about them.
Yeah.
Well, you have a good color sense, and I think some people just do. You know, we've talked to many artists, needlework artists, and I think of Orna Willis. She's a needlepoint artist, and her colors, if you just laid them out, you're like, these are a little wild. You know, how can they all go together? But when she puts them on a canvas, they work. And I think that's what you do. Your colors work together. They sing together.
Yeah, I wish I knew why they work. I wish I understood my mind. I had a lot of colors, and now I'm trying not to buy more colors and just use the ones that I have. And I'm down for a lot. So now I'm starting to struggle. Like, I have fewer colors. Let's see how long that will last.
See, okay, you're not allowed to make those kinds of statements on this podcast. No.
And that goes against my natural philosophy of, you always need the thread, you know.
Yeah. Go buy more color.
I was down for darker colors. I have so many light colors, and I didn't have dark colors, but I need them. I was like struggling. And I bought like all the different colors, so blue, red, pink, all the dark ones, dark shades. And now I have a huge stock of dark colors. But because a lot of colors are similar to each other from the ones that I have. I'm looking at them and I think this is the same color. The difference between them is so small, but I can still see the difference. But I cannot work with one or two colors. I need a lot of them.
Yeah.
Yes, I agree. And your work is beautiful, all the colors you use. How you place them.
Yeah, funny thing. So a funny thing is not no one, but like five people have seen my work live because I've started doing this through COVID. So no one was allowed to see it. And obviously, I don't carry them outside to show people. And when you are looking at them in person, you can see so many colors mixed together. And then when you go a bit far from the work, you can see, oh, this works in harmony. But if you look at them close, it doesn't make any sense. There are so many different colors.
Yeah,
I think
that's the thing
that I love the most.
Yeah, that's the thing that that entered my mind looking at your work is because I'm looking at the stitching and you're working up close, exactly that. Yeah, it almost doesn't work. And you must constantly have to be holding it out at arm's length or stepping back to make sure you're getting the look that you're after?
Yeah, when I start doing it, so I usually only start with four different colors, and I try to fill as much as I can with only these four colors, and then I start mixing it up, in kind of blending the colors together, and that's when it starts being really hard. But yeah, I usually have them like in my bedroom, and I just walk through them. It's like, yeah, this is making sense. We're going in the right path. Yeah, but it's hard. And for me, the hardest part, I think, is the beginning, because the fabric is really strong, the colors, and it really hurts my eyes. I don't think it's healthy for my eyes. Yeah, I was teaching in the parking the other day, and an old lady came to me and she was like, I don't think that's good for you. I'm like, yeah, I know. But once it starts having a lot of thread, it's okay.
Advice from a passersby.
Yeah.
Young lady, that's not good for your eyes.
Yeah. You're like, don't smoke, don't do drugs. And she tells me this.
Don't stitch close to your paint.
As you're stitching along, when you realize that the colors need to be adjusted, do you pull threads out, or do you just stitch over and adjust by overlaying?
No, I usually take them out. Well, it depends. If I'm in a beginning stage, I will take them out. If they are mixed with a lot of threads, I just go through them. Or if I'm at the beginning of putting some stitch, I only did like four stitches of a color, I take it out. But I've done that. Of the four colors that I've chosen, if I don't like one of them in the fabric, I will take it out. It doesn't matter how much I've done, I will pull it out.
Yeah. Interesting. And we were both fascinated with the fact that you appear to use the thread as it comes off the skein, all six strands. You don't separate?
Yeah, I usually use six strands, basically because the embroidery is quite big. So if I would be using like just two or three, it would take me a long time to do it. I only use I only work with two, four, or six threads, because of the way that I can put the thread in the fabric without doing a knot. Mm-hmm. Because if I do a knot, then there's a point in my work where I cannot put the needle through the fabric because it just gets stuck in the knots. So I need to do it in a way that it's hidden, like the knot. So I only work with two, four, or six strands. And only for the lips or the eyes, it's the only way that I don't use six, I think. When I want to do details, I use less.
Okay.
But it's mostly six.
Okay, so do you ever blend colors together in your needle?
No, never. It sounded like I was offended by that question, right? I'm not. It's just like, I think it's the way it works for me. But that's a funny thing you ask. I never thought about doing it. You are putting ideas in my mind.
Well, your thread painting looks similar to Van Gogh's brush stroke. Is what it reminds me of.
Yeah, you're not the first person telling me this, which is a huge compliment.
Well, yes, it does.
That's what it is. That's what it is, Beth. Thank you. I knew there was something.
That was it?
Oh, that was it. Because I looked at that, and the little voice in my head was trying to come up with, that's what it is.
It looks like a very, the big brush strokes he used. And then I homeschooled my kids, so we took a little course in how Van Gogh painted, and what he would dip his paint into like three colors and then brush it on, and you just put this glob of paint on it, and it worked, and it looks like you're doing that with thread, though. You're making those big bold statements with her thread. And I love how it looks. And I don't know this guy's name. I just know he's from The Office. His portrait is fantastic. The colors you use, like in his forehead and in his. Okay. Yeah, and I never watched it. I guess I'm showing my age.
Oh my God, you never watched it. Are you allowed to be here anymore?
Well, my daughter wouldn't think so. I think she watches it.
I never watched it because I worked in the corporate world and too much of it was true and I couldn't deal with it.
I work in the corporate world and I love to see the references between like the show and the real life. I was like, yeah. Yeah. This is actually accurate.
Yeah, too accurate. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that just made my nervous system go wacky, so I quit watching it. Yep. Yeah.
It's funny. You're like, oh, yeah, this is actually my boss. Yeah, yep. He's this character.
Yeah. So that's where that idiotic decision came from. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. He's watching this as well, taking ideas.
Yeah. I couldn't deal with it. No, pass.
The one from The Office was pretty hard because the fabric was yellow and blue, and I was using yellow and blue in the portrait as well. So that was challenging. But if you know the series, you'll know that yellow is a big part of the character. So I had to use yellow.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I'm still not going to watch it. Not happening. Mm-mm. No.
Okay. I'll never be in this podcast again, okay?
It's quite, we've been stalled our guests. Enjoys it. My wife enjoys it immensely, but no thanks. Yeah.
Yeah, it was what got me through college as well. So I have an emotional connection with it.
And then you got to the real world, the job world. Oh no, it's true. Yuck.
Yeah, it's so funny. Sometimes I go to the office, and there's like small references, and I'm like, oh, this is exactly that scene, and I just start laughing alone because yeah, this is this scene. Or trying to imagine that in today's office because they are modern and whatever. It is funny. It's a good way to look at work.
Ugh, yeah. so many artists who do faces, portraits, faces, whatever it is, whether it's animals or humans, whatever, have to start with the eye. Do you start with the eye to get it right first, or does it just come along?
For me, it's not so much to get it right. It has to do with the tension in the fabric. When I don't work first in the eye and I start doing what's around it, the fabric in the middle of the hoop, it starts to get a little bit loose. I don't know why. So when I try to do the eye, it starts getting pearly. I don't know why. So that's why I start with the eye first.
Okay.
It has to do with the tension in the fabric.
Okay. Yeah. Do you have to fiddle with the eyes a lot to get them right? Or do they just...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay.
No, it's horrible. I think the hardest part for me is the eyes, then the nose, and then the ears. But the ears, I can do portraits without ears, just cover them with hair. But the nose and the eyes are the hardest.
Yeah. She only does portraits of people with long hair.
Actually, the one that I'm going to start, because I finished one recently and I'm doing another one, has the ears covered because the previous one that I've done had the 2 years showing. And I was like, I cannot do it. I cannot do another one with ears. I'll just do one with them covered. I think eventually I'll have to sit down and like do just ears to get it right, to understand how's it working.
Yeah,
right. Mm-hmm.
I can see how it would be a tough shape to do from a frontal view because how far do they stick out and they're such a weird shaped piece of anatomy. Yeah,
the shades that they have and the different. If you go and this will be a strange thing for you to Google, but if you go and Google ears, you'll see how different they are from each other. It's so, I don't know how to explain it. Like, I did courses in college that were easier than that, really.
Well, see, that's the thing that, because, I mean, I do words for a living. And sometimes if you sit and study a word, like, just look at it. After a while, it just becomes funny. Because it's, you know, when you just start looking at the letters, I mean, this probably doesn't make any sense, but at some point, it just becomes a strange thing. And there are some words I'm sure I shy away from because they're just weird to me. But I can see how studying anatomy after a while, trying to get it right, and it just distorts in your head and it becomes very difficult.
Yeah, I think I struggle with it, and then I find things that are difficult in it. So I'm looking at so many, when I look at an ear, I'm looking at so many different things. It's funny because now when I see people, this is so weird, I try, like I'm looking at people's eyes, I'm looking at their features and kind of understanding how hard it would be to stitch them.
Right.
What my brain does. And it happens with the ears, like I'm speaking to people and I'm looking at their ears, and that would be so hard to stitch. Yeah, it kind of made me aware of people's features, like how different our eyes are, the nose is everything.
And lips.
Yeah.
Lips are hard. Yeah.
Lips are hard, yeah. And eyelashes, which I don't do.
Yeah.
Because I cannot get them right.
I can see you sitting in a coffee shop with a group of three or four, and you're not even there. You're just studying people's ears. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not even listening to the conversation. I'm just looking at their features.
So how would I do this in embroidery? How would I do your face in embroidery? Let's think. What color would I use there?
And another thing is the direction of the stitches. I don't know if people think about this when they are looking at my work, but it's kind of hard to get right the direction of the stitches, especially on the nose.
Mm.
Right above your lips, it's really hard to get the nose right. Someone once told me, imagine that you have a ball at the tip of your nose. And now I use that in my work, and it works. It makes it look natural. But it's really hard to get the direction of the stitches right to make it look accurate.
Hmm. Yeah, I can see it. Because the direction of stitches in your art really plays a major role in creating the shape and the contours. Oh, I can see where that'd be a problem, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's the direction of the stitches is everything. It's what makes it work. And the thing is, at least I couldn't find a reference as to which direction it should take. So when you do pencil portrait, you need to look at the directions they're doing, and that would make sense. Hmm. Some, like the forehead, is pretty straightforward. The direction of the stitches. But then when you move from the eyes to the mouth, that's where it gets really hard. And the chin is actually pretty difficult. And it's a thing like every chin will be this way. No, it's not. It's a lie. Everyone has different chins, okay? You all get different direction of stitches.
You mentioned that you get a lot of inspiration from museum art.
Yeah.
You spend a lot of time, we just walk in and take pictures and study them. And
yeah, so there's, I think I take two different kinds of inspiration. One is I wish I could have my work in a gallery. and the other, I love portraits, not only stitched. I love every different kind of representation people make, especially oil painting. I love to see portraits in oil painting because when you get close to the painting, you see how much detail they have. And that's what I try to do with my work as well. So yeah, I love to go to museums and just look at the different ways people represent people. And it's kind of amazing. It's not always a good experience. But yeah, right after COVID, I felt the need to be in museums and in galleries, maybe because we were stuck inside for so long.
Yeah.
So now I make a point of going.
So do you use the brush strokes that artists use? Do you use that as a guide for your stitches?
Yeah, kind of. So, for example, for the ears, if I go to a museum and then I see a painting where the artist has got the ears right, I will take a picture.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of a reference. So he uses color here to make it darker here. He uses direction, so I'll try this. Yeah, and it has nothing to do with stitching. I almost never see anything stitched in museums. It's almost always painting. But it helps me a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, that's because stitching is women's work. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. So that's why it's not museums, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I was not going to get into that, but I'm glad you did.
Oh, we've talked about it plenty, believe me, Rita.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
I think it needs to be a conversation. Actually, when I see something in embroidery, I actually get impressed. Like, oh my God, we are represented in a gallery or in a museum.
Yeah. Yeah. Needs to be more of that. Yep. All right. We have to talk about the fact that you stitch on giant hoops and you have a very unique way of holding your hoop.
You know what? I was thinking about this the other day. I actually bought a support for my hoop. It arrived this week, which is going to save my life. But the way
it's
that
certainly
I
going to cut down on the blood loss.
Yeah, so the way that I hold my hoop, for people listening who don't know, I put my hand in the middle of the fabric because it gets really heavy. And then I have all my fingers spread, and then I just go put the needle through two of my fingers. Because I like to feel that I know where the needle is going. I know where I have my fingers, and I like to just hold the fabric there. It's pretty dangerous. I would not recommend it. Yeah, but I was doing this the other day, and I was like, I need to record this because this is so strange. But I never hold my hoop like on the sides, never.
Yeah and it's such a big hoop. You're balancing it in your hand. I'm thinking after a while that got to get tiring.
Yeah,
for so your arm.
The project that I was working on last week, I did a lot. I usually don't stitch in a lot of consecutive days, but I was doing it, and then I kind of got an injury in my hand, in my right hand. The thing is, I do embroidery and then I work on the computer, and I was writing and it hurt me a lot. Like, I need to stop. And it was because of how heavy the embroidery becomes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. With all those threads in it. And then the hoop, you're holding it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you found something to support your hoop then.
Yeah. Now I had one, but I couldn't adjust it to different positions. So now I have one that I think is going to improve my life a lot. I'm going to use it for my next work. I will document it on Instagram. Let's see how that goes.
Yes.
Yeah, the person that comes up with an affordable stand that will adjust the way everybody wants it is going to be very rich.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I can recommend you this one. It's a Portuguese brand. It has like so many different settings, and it's amazing. Yeah.
Well, okay, now, but we gotta know what is it?
What is?
What's the brand? Yeah.
Oh, I don't know how it's. Oh, wait, let me.
We gotta know. A part of our job is to enable people to spend their money. We gotta know.
That's right. Right. You know, you never know. Somebody might say, okay, that's the one for me. I'm going to order it from Portugal.
Okay. So I'll tell them. I said this in the podcast. So it's called Bezugo. It's B Zugo.
B,
okay.
B as in boy, U-G-O.
B, Z.
Okay.
G-O.
B-Z-U-G-O.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. All right, now we're going to have to look them up.
Yeah, I can post them on my story and then tag you.
Okay.
And you'll get, I'll make them famous in here.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Because the support is amazing.
Okay. Because Beth and I are more than willing to make the sacrifice to buy, to try. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. You can
absolutely
always come
you
to
know.
Portugal and buy it here. Just an excuse to come to Portugal.
Road trip.
I would love an excuse. Oh, yes. An excuse to go to Portugal. It's on my bucket list. Yes.
Yeah. This can be your excuse.
Okay. I'll just tell my husband, I'm sorry, I have to make a road trip to Portugal.
Yeah. They don't ship to the U.S., so I need to go there.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. We have justification.
Yeah.
All right. Got to check that out. B-Z-U-G-O. All right. Got to check that
exactly.
out.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So when you're – oh, man, it costs me money every time we do these things. Every time.
I know.
When you're doing your portraits, do you have a number of them lined up to do, or do you just do one when you're inspired?
No, I try to work only on one project at a time. Because if I start another one, I'll just give up on the one that I've just dropped. I have some, not portraits, but other things that I try to do, and I just give up. That's the thing. When it's not a portrait, I'm giving up. I try it, but I'm never going to finish. I do it from the beginning to the end, all in one go.
Okay.
I did it all in one go like I did it in a day, but it's not. It's going to happen, okay?
Right, right.
I wish it was that fast, but it's not.
So what happens if you get stuck on a spot? Do you just put it away, just hang it for a while and look at it?
Yeah, that's what I do. I give some time and space between me and him. Yeah, because it sometimes happens. Like, I don't know what color I should use. And I just give it a time and then I'll go back to it.
Right. So about how long does it take you to make a portrait?
Oh, I hate it when people made me this question because I did it. No, it's fine. I do it like in small times of the day. So sometimes it takes me like 2 months to do a portrait because I'm not working long hours in it. But I did kept track of one embroidery and it took me like 50 hours to do it. Maybe because I'm not working long hours in it and I'm doing a lot of pauses between them. But it does take me a long time. I did a poll on Instagram to ask people what they thought it was. And I was surprised that embroidery artists couldn't get it right. I was like, you know, this takes a long time. So
right.
Yeah, it's usually around 50 hours.
Well, I don't keep track of my hours because I have a friend who does. She tracks everything, every hour she works on a piece.
I mean,
but I found that.
Yeah, if you have to sell your work and you have to, I'm doing air quotes, justify your price, I understand why you would do it. But I don't really care how long it takes.
Right. And for me, it was discouraging because, I mean, it takes me forever to work on a piece. And so it's like, oh, I don't really want to know anymore.
Yeah.
It takes me a long time.
Yeah, I felt that when I was like, oh, is this right? And sometimes I didn't even keep track. So there was a day that I didn't put the hours. And I was like, oh, it is really a long time to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because you, I mean, for me, I have zero notion of time. I can be stitching for 3 hours and not even knowing. So when people ask me, I was like, I have no idea. I literally have no idea.
Right, right. You get into a zone and then you're like, well,
yeah, one way that helped me was I started listening to audiobooks when I was stitching. And I was like, oh, yeah, the whole audiobook, I was stitching this. So I knew more or less the time, like how many chapters I did it. Yeah, but usually I don't know.
That's a good timekeeper right there. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
See, 50 hours, when you said that, I was surprised because I would have guessed 100 hours or more.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I think 50 hours is a lot.
No, see, I thought it would be much more. That's so I'm surprised. To me, that's pretty fast. Yeah. Hmm. Okay.
Yeah, maybe I'm doing much. The challenge that I have for myself now is doing bigger portraits. So they are already a little bit big, but I'm trying to do them bigger, not the size of the artist we were talking about just now.
Yeah.
But the bigger it is, the longer it will take me.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Hmm. All right, Rita, we got to stop. This is fun. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah.
This
was
thank
on
you
my
talking.
Bucket list. Okay. I am crossing something from my bucket list.
Okay.
Oh, good.
All right, Rita, thanks. Enjoy your art. And thanks to everyone for listening.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye.